Blog Talk Radio.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime and violence if we all agree to do one thing: share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talents, share our finances, but most of all, let's share our love. This is the Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, every morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as we bring you stimulating discussions about the issues affecting our lives. If you're listening online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution, press the blue button that says follow and get our daily topics every morning directly to your email and your smartphone.
Hi, I'm Naima Latif, executive producer of the Female Solution Radio Show. We invite you to call in 515-605-9325 and participate in this daily think tank as we examine the challenges we face and develop solutions that restore peace and harmony. We are global transformers, changing the world from the way it is to the way it should be. We are one. Wherever we live on this earth, we are one human family. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to extend a greeting to all the members of our family, whenever and wherever you may be listening around the world. To our family in China, Ni Hao. In India, Namaste. In Japan, Konnichiwa. In Korea, Annyeonghaseyo. In Russia, Zdravstvuyte. In Germany, Guten Tag. In Poland, Dzień dobry. In France, Bonjour. In Spain, Hola. In Italy, Ciao. In Egypt, Ahlan wa sahlan. In Ghana, Akwaaba. In Nigeria, Peleo. In South Africa, Sawubona. In Senegal, Nangadef. In Kenya, Jambo. In Israel, Shalom. In Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Saudi Arabia, Assalamu alaikum. Greetings, and may peace be upon you all.
Hey, good afternoon, good morning, good evening, Grand Rising. This is Jana. Welcome to the Success Strategy Show with me on the Female Solution Worldwide Radio and TV Network. I'm the author of Success Strategies for Black People, and I host the annual Blogging Carnival for Nonviolence. And I am your host for today, and on the first Saturday of every month. Here on the Success Strategies Show, every month we seek to help you and support you to find solutions to your problems and find solutions to our community's problems. We are here to help you make 2022 your best year yet. To speak with my guests, and if you have any questions for our guests, please phone in on 515-605-9325. And if you're outside the United States, you have to put an 001 in front of that. So it's 001-515-605-9325. You can also join us on Facebook at The Female Solution and on YouTube at The Female Solution, although I think we're a little bit technically challenged today. So, you know, if you're here with us on Blog Talk, stay here with us. I've got some very illustrious guests coming in today. Oh, yes, and I'd also like to mention the Blogging Carnival for Nonviolence, which is part of the annual Month of Nonviolence held by Black Women for Positive Change. And it's open to everyone, of course. I'll be accepting blogs from next week, next month, from June 2022, from about the 15th of June onwards. So keep your eyes open for that. Today, we'll be talking about violence reduction, including gun violence, knife violence, and youth violence, generally. I will be joined today by members of the National Black Nurses Association, NBNA, Ad Hoc Committee on Violence Reduction. My guest today will be Carthenia Jefferson. I'm not sure if this is Esquire. And she's also an RN. So she's a nurse and also a lawyer. She's a family and juvenile law attorney. And she also is the NBNA, that's National Black Nurses Association, chair of the Committee on Violence Reduction. And she's also, as I am, a member of Black Women for Positive Change and the Alabama liaison for, no, she's the NBNA and Alabama liaison for Black Women for Positive Change. So we're just waiting for her to phone in now. Hopefully she'll be phoning in momentarily. And my other guest today is Phyllis Evans, who is an Alabama juvenile correctional officer with 28 years experience. And she's also a member of the Lawrence Mon Jefferson Jr. Foundation. And she works with restorative justice. I'm going to talk some more later on about the Lawrence Mon Jefferson Jr. Foundation once my guests arrive. So we're just waiting for them to arrive. Let me see. I think I've got a message for her now. Let's see. So if you've got any questions for my guests, and also if you've got any suggestions, because what I'm always looking for are practical solutions to the violence. And it seems to me that the youth violence problem is getting worse. I mean, we have more young people experiencing domestic violence, not just young people, but elders as well, and adults as well, experiencing more domestic violence because of the pandemic and the lockdown. And it really breaks my heart sometimes. Things seem to be getting worse to me because and I think part of that has to do with the lockdown. People are shut indoors all the time, and that means people who are being abused are shut in with their abusers. Young people are having more mental health issues. Well, so are adults. You know, being shut indoors all day, and, you know, children need to get out. They need to be able to move around. They haven't been able to go to school. They haven't been able to see their friends. And it's created some, in my opinion, it's created some of the very, very bizarre situations that we have seen over the past few months, including, for example, I mentioned this a few months ago, an incident where there was young people in Hyde Park, which is in the middle of London, in broad daylight. All these young people were chasing one young guy, and they were carrying knives and machetes, and it just really frightened me. You know, they didn't care about the fact that there were other people around. Now, to me, I just think that is indicative of some of the mental health issues that are arising or worsening for people under the recent lockdowns that we've had, a series of lockdowns. And I'd like to know your thoughts. So if you'd like to share your thoughts, please phone in on 515-605-9325. And if you're outside of the United States, put a 001 in front of that. So that would be 001-515-605-9325. So... I want to know your thoughts, and I particularly want to know your thoughts about what we can do about it, practical things we can do about it. Because, the thing is, what happens with the young people is reflecting all of society. It's reflecting, the things... the things that we're all facing, but, obviously younger people don't necessarily have the resources, but I'm talking about inner resources, we hope that adults have them as well. Adults aren't necessarily, aren't necessarily also equipped to deal with certain extreme situations. And that's one of the many, many reasons why I really, really want as many people as possible to find out about nonviolent communication, NVC, and learn the skills of NVC. And this is why I wrote my book, Affirmations for Parents, because, you know, we all need these skills, and they can really make a difference. They can make a huge difference. So, as I said, I'd like your thoughts on what we can do about the escalating violence. In Britain, gun crime and knife crime are both escalating, and the knife crime is a bigger problem than the gun crime, but they're both escalating. And, you know, we are seeing more violence on the macro and on the micro. Like, for example, what's happening in Ukraine right now, which I find really, really shocking, and I really never expected to see in my lifetime. I thought the days where Europe got involved in, you know, and the whole rest of the world got involved in these multinational conflicts, I thought those days were behind us. I really did. I really did not expect to see this in my lifetime. So I'm finding it, you know, really quite shocking. I'm going to go to a commercial because I just need to write to my...
Good morning, Donna. This is Naima.
Oh, good afternoon, Naima. Hi there.
Yeah, good afternoon. Yeah, I know it's good morning. I don't know what day of time it is. But, yeah,
no, it's confusing, isn't it? Because I'm in the UK and you're over there.
Yeah, I know.
and how? I mean, that's good. It means we have a global reach. And that's what we want, right?
Right. But I have a question.
You know, and I'm particularly always interested
in
practical ways to stop the violence and practical ways to de-escalate the violence. You know, I mean, it's fine saying it's terrible, it's awful, it's horrible. Well, it is. It is terrible. It is awful. It is horrible. But I'm more interested in the solutions. What can we actually do about it? And as I said, nonviolent communication is one response to violence that can, you know, potentially help us. And it's very, very effective in de-escalating, and I think it's even more more effective in prevention of violence, because I don't really think it needs to get to that point. I just don't think it needs to get to that point where violence is so extreme, which is where we are now with Vladimir Putin. I mean, he's been coming... Well, sending his agents onto British soil for quite a few years now and killing people using poisons, basically. One could call them chemical weapons, but they're not weapons of mass destruction. They're very, very targeted. But, you know, it's still happening. And now he's got into a war. So I just find these times really, really frightening. I really do. And I'd like to know what are your thoughts about that, Naima?
Well, I recently attended a press conference with some of the, clergy leaders. Well, there's Reverend Jesse Jackson and Father Michael Flager, who are known to have been championing peace or efforts for peace. And they had a press conference at a funeral home, Callahan Funeral Home. And he gained kind of worldwide publicity when he conducted the funeral for the young lady who was killed after she had performed for the president's inauguration, for Barack Obama's inauguration, Hadiya Pendleton. And he's been seeing an increase in youth crime and a lot of violence. And one of the things that they suggested is that the government's put more money and resources behind various youth programs, whether it's training programs, athletic programs, something for them to do that's constructive. Because, you know, like you say, you've been locked down for a long time. Schools have been very sketchy in terms of a set routine, and there's a lot of frustration in the lockdown, a lot of boredom. And also, as you pointed out, you have a lot of young people who are living with their abusers and can't get away, can't get out.
Adults as well, not just young people, but particularly concerned about the youngest.
Yes. And you know, mm. young people, a lot of times they're reacting to the violence that they're experiencing yeah. in their own home. Yeah. And people don't realize that this is where it's coming from. So they will blame the young person who's reacting violently and inflicting violence at others instead of asking the question, what happened to them to push them to this point? It's not just
Yes, absolutely. We need to look at the roots of the problem, the roots of the issue. I completely agree. I was talking to someone the other day because in Britain, you see, Roots had a really, really big impact. When Roots came on the TV in the 70s, a lot of young people basically weren't aware of the history. Now, I find this, to be honest, hard to believe and hard to understand. But this is what I've been told many, many times, and I was told this again the other day. I was speaking to a sister who was saying that when Roots came on in the 70s, she actually started getting into a lot of fights in school. She had a sister and a brother in the same school. And she, I think, in particular, started getting into a lot of fights with people because all the things that she'd had to put up with in the past, she wasn't going to put up with anymore. She wasn't prepared to. And you see, one of the problems that we have sometimes is we're not aware of our history. And if we don't have a historical context, then we can't really understand what's going on. This whole thing about, what do they call it now? The race, critical race theory, that's it. This whole thing about critical race theory, you know, we're not supposed to actually talk about the historical roots of the racism that we experience, that black people experience. And we're not supposed to talk about it because it upsets white people. And, you know, to me, as far as I'm concerned, that's white people. And that is denial. They don't want to admit what they've done, and they don't want to admit the implications of the, and the long-term effects of what they've done. You know, we're not supposed to talk about it. So if we don't talk about it, don't educate ourselves and educate each other and share the information, then it's as if none of those things actually happened, but we know that they did.
Been the big argument. Nobody wants to put a historical context to this. It came from somewhere.
We want to pretend that what was done to people all those years ago, that we want to pretend that has no effect on us now. Well, you know, it does have an effect on us.
Yes, I think a lot of the argument that people have been using against critical race theory is that it will create white guilt. But I don't think it matters if people feel, you know, you don't need to feel guilty. Just understand where you did things wrong. Well, not personally. You know, we shouldn't take it personally if something happened in the past because we didn't do it. But we need to know what was done, whether it's our ancestors, other people's ancestors, or whatever. People made mistakes. They made bad decisions.
Yes.
They hurt people.
Yes.
This happened. If we talk about it and we analyze it, then we can figure out how to not repeat the same mistakes. That just
absolutely. And how can we come in? Because, you see, as you know, I think we both agree about this, there's a lot of healing that needs to happen. You know, we need African-American, what did you call it, psychic healing?
Yes. Well, we call it psychic trauma, which, you know, a trauma
to
the psyche,
the mind,
the soul.
We need to understand the effects of psychic trauma because they've been long-term effects.
Yes, and it keeps getting passed down to generations. And
that's right, and it always will be until we heal it.
Until we
heal it, well, yes, the first step is technology, yes. But until we heal it, it's just going to keep affecting our families. It's going to keep affecting our communities from one generation to the next. And I'm really passionate about this. I'm always talking about this, the need for healing. And how can we heal something when we're not even aware that it happened?
Right. And
you know,
also,
we're just supposed to pretend it never happened. That's not good enough.
You know, and also you can't – and you can't punish people for being in pain, because that's really what it boils down to. People are acting out of internal pain that
absolutely.
Has not healed. So what you do, give them more pain? Does that make any sense?
That's right. Exactly. But that's what tends to happen. We tend to blame the victim. We tend to blame the victim, and now we're not even we're supposed to pretend that we're not even victims, right? That we haven't been. Remember, there was a day, about 10 years ago, sometime between 5 and 10 years ago, there was a day where in two different Starbucks, in two different states in the United States, there was an incident. Remember that?
I remember that, yes. Were they arrested
when black people came in and they wanted to sit down and have a cup of coffee and have a chat, have a meeting or something. And they were told that they couldn't come in. And it happened in two different Starbucks in two different states on the same day. So what are we supposed to do? Just pretend that that's a coincidence? I don't think so.
Right. I mean, that's an attitude. That's a hostile attitude.
Yeah.
So when you're living with hostility every single day, that's going to affect you.
Yes, yes. And the thing is that it's an attitude and it has deep roots. It has very, very deep roots, that attitude. And that's what we have to understand.
Until we actually
talk about it and learn about it and teach others about it, we're never going to be able to understand it and we're never going to be able to heal it.
Right. I'm just going to get
onto my email account, and my email account is not doing what I want it to do, because I got an email from my guest and I can't respond because I can't get into my email address. So I'm thinking, should we have a little break?
Take a commercial break. Maybe you'll get a chance to actually call her up, because, you know, unless you can text her.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Okay. Oh, look, I think I've gotten to my email. Anyway, yeah, let's have a little break now.
Okay, well, I'll run a few commercials.
You are tuned in to the Soulful Chicago Book Fair 2020 Vision Fundraising Campaign. That's right. You can support the vision of reviving Black literary excellence in this city by simply taking your $20 or more and donating it on our website. Visit www.soulfulchicagobookfair.com and click the Donate tab on our homepage, or give us a call at 646-359-6605, and we welcome you, helping us breathe literary life into the South Side of Chicago.
Okay, you can go to the psychic trauma.
We all say we would like to be wealthy, but wealth isn't determined by how much money you have. Wealth is determined by your power to define what money is. The dictionary defines money as something used as a way to pay for goods and services and to pay people for their work. So how would you like to have access to an unlimited source of money? Money that is not taxed by the government. Money that increases as you share the opportunity with others. Money that you can use to pay for goods and services and pay people for their work. I'm talking about Bitcoin. It's the future of independent wealth building. Bitcoin is the new money that you control. Get started building your wealth. Call 312-849-3456. That's 312-849-3456.
Hi, and we've got someone on the line. Who's on the line? Welcome to the show. Hi, can you hear me? 773? Okay. I don't know if she stepped out of the room or something. Let's have another little break.
What happens when a group of people are kidnapped from their homes, smuggled away in chains, and held captive in a foreign land where they are tortured, raped, and forced to perform hard labor by the lash of a whip and under the constant threat of death. Slavery, the African-American psychic trauma. What happened to the doctors, writers, scientists, builders, educators, and spiritual leaders from Africa's golden age? Who did they really capture and sell into slavery? Are all African-Americans suffering from psychic trauma because of a conspiracy to hide their true identities? Do you have psychic trauma? Take the test on page 22 of the book and see. Order it online today at www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com, and get your personally autographed copy of the book, Slavery, the African American Psychic Trauma.
Okay, and we're back. Yeah, because you know, you have to think about this, right? All, certainly all black people in the diaspora are experiencing psychic trauma, and we have for generations. And that means the white people have to be experiencing psychic trauma as well, because that's why they inflicted it on us. It's one of the reasons why they inflicted it on us. So when we heal our own community, then we will be healing other communities as well.
You know, I think people never think about that, the fact that everybody in America was traumatized by a very brutal, unnatural system, very cruel. And so whites have an extreme fear that they live with, and that's their trauma. That's why they overreact.
That's right.
That's why they believe that our children are older than they are and are quick to call the law on children. Which is an unnatural
because they're terrified. Terrified of black people.
Yes, you know, and so they're terrified because of the lies they told themselves about who we are and what
That's right.
Out of fear that we're going to have this spirit of vengeance, and we're going to, at some point, repay what was done to us. So
that's right.
That
that's
paranoia.
Right. Yeah.
And so they basically are traumatized and are acting out of their trauma as well. And like you say, and
that's
then
right.
they
traumatized
and admit there's a problem.
Slavery.
Yes.
You know, you have
I
people that were coming from extreme poverty that went over, and
yes.
it wasn't just to the United States, because the majority of Africans were not taken to the United States. The majority were taken to the Caribbean. And also
right.
many, many African people were taken to South America as well. So the
yes.
biggest black population outside of Nigeria is in Brazil. So African people
yes.
were taken to
I'm
many, many different
that.
Places and experienced the same traumas. And Europeans, some of them came from extreme poverty, and they went over to the Caribbean to work on the plantations to make money, and they came home extremely wealthy. They went from extreme poverty to extreme wealth because of slavery.
Yes.
So, you know, obviously they were traumatized when they went there because they were living in extreme poverty, and, you know, they were living in violent circumstances where people could be transported to another country because they stole a loaf of bread, things like that. You know, if you read Les Miserables, or if you see one of the productions of Les Miserables, the central character, Jean Valjean, was in prison for 19 years because he stole a loaf of bread. Right? That was
right.
his threat.
How crazy is that?
Yeah, how crazy is that? So they were coming from trauma. That's one of the reasons why they were inflicting trauma on us. And then they had all these stereotypes
yes.
that said human, yeah, that black people aren't human, that black people... don't feel pain the way Europeans are. Can I just find out who's on the line, please? Area code 773, are you there? Are you with us? I just
yes. sent
a couple of emails to my guest.
Oh, I heard a voice.
Hello?
Someone respond.
Hello, can you hear
Hi,
me?
Hi, welcome. What's your name?
My name is Maurice Gray.
Welcome, Maurice.
Oh. Thank you.
So have you been listening to what we've been saying? We've been talking about African-American psychic trauma.
I'm sorry, I have not been listening. I was trying to get on to listen, but I didn't know how to do it.
Sorry,
so.
We were having some technical difficulties. I don't know if you have been
okay,
as well.
I thought it was on my end.
It could be on your end, but it's not just on your end, I can assure you.
Okay,
so welcome,
all right.
Welcome.
Thank you,
so
thank you very much.
So what are your thoughts about African-American psychic trauma? And when we say African-American, we're talking about African people in general in the diaspora, yeah?
Okay. Well, I think that we definitely have to do some things in uniting us and educating us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we definitely have to do that. And one of the things that we're currently doing is trying to spread love in our community.
Absolutely. That's wonderful. When you say we, who is we?
I have an organization that I founded. The name of my organization is the Soil Foundation. It's spelled S-O-Y-L. It's an acronym for Save Our Youth Lives.
Right,
and,
excellent. That's excellent. And where are you based?
We're based on the west side of Chicago, 5817 West Corcoran.
I don't know Chicago at all, but thank you for the information, because obviously Naima's based there. Quite a few of our listeners are based there and our presenters. And I've got someone else on the line, but I really appreciate your input, Marcus. Did you say Marcus? Sorry.
Naima. Hello? Hello?
Yeah.
Welcome.
Yes.
I just wanted to tell you, that's my brother that's on the line, and he's having an event to reach out in the community for the youth. This is Rashida. So that's my younger brother. And,
okay.
He's having,
hey, what's
he's
your name?
Reaching out in the community, and he's having Bindi as well. So,
excellent. I'm sorry, what's your name?
Rashida Ali.
Okay, well, welcome. I'm just going to see, because I think one of my guests might be on the line now. Let me just check. Yeah, we are having some technical challenges, but we're keeping going despite these challenges. Hi, good evening. Welcome. Welcome.
In the meantime, Jonathan, we can hear more about this event and how it's going to help with the youth violence, because this is a worldwide problem, as you've seen, that young people in London are violent as well.
So who's on the line, please? And if you've got background noise, can you please turn down the volume? Thank you. I just switch it off. Thank you. Who's calling from area code 646? Hi, good evening. Jana speaking. Welcome to my show. Can you hear me? It sounds like you might have your TV on.
Yeah, you may have to mute your mic. When they walk away from the phone, you have to mute your mic until they come back to their
phone. Oh, going to have to mute them. Oh, that's a shame. Well, okay.
They'll come back.
Can you see the studio right now? Oh, I see. Okay, yeah, I might have to mute. Here we go. Is it muting? No, it's not muting. Okay, I'm going to just switch to... Okay.
There it is.
So I wasn't sure if that was one of my guests. But anyway, so do you have any thoughts about African-American psychic trauma?
Yes.
Tell us what you think.
And what are some ways that... Because I know that... Rashida has been through multiple traumas, and as have many of us. But
as have many of us, is that exactly right?
Yes, and Rashida, you were working on a petition to get counseling or to have therapy as part of, I guess, the reparations package that people are talking about.
No,
maybe you can tell us a bit about
that. I did a proposal for the people who are homeless, and making it mandatory that they get treatment because a lot of them are ostracized and homicide among them and injuries.
Mm-hmm.
So just recently here in Chicago, you had a man going around stabbing the homeless people. And then with the minds of our community in Chicago, 80% of the homicides are black people. And so that's traumatic. You know, you don't have to listen to the radio. You just can go to the store. I went to a cleaners the other day, and a man was laying there dead on the concrete in the black neighborhood on the south side. Mm. So, yes, I had a lot of trauma. And then my grandson, he was an A-plus student, and he had his own business, and he was 26, making over $100,000. He was shot in the head. And so so in Chicago, black folks are expressing a lot of hate, doing a lot of hate crime.
Yes.
I was recently stabbed. And I didn't do anything to this person. Didn't even have an altercation. So, yeah, that's trauma. And then you hear people just say, oh, you got to get over your fears. How can you get over a fear of injury, traumaphobia, when you're constantly getting injured or you're seeing somebody get injured, other than get some mental health therapy? So what I did, my friend was getting her PhD, and I brought her to my place of worship. So if any woman acknowledge or man, acknowledge that they are having some inhibitions and some things that are barriers because of the hate among us and the injuries sustained in our community. So I myself in therapy because I have, you know, common sense enough to know what's painful for me. But a lot of things I've experienced in my trauma is a lot of our people, for some reason, they put more injuries on you when you're in transition or homeless or you've been injured. And they sit around and they, you know, they judge and misjudge instead of offering. And see, that's part of my faith and part of my upbringing as charity begins with home and spread apart. Now, that's a charitable act to me. If you get some treatment for your people to eliminate some of this crime and abuse among your people in your own community. They're really cruel to each other. Oh, you should have been more successful. Or you should have this because you do this.
Because it's your fault. It's called blaming the victim, right? Blaming
the victim.
A lot.
Yeah, a lot. So we have to blame ourselves.
A lot because we are carrying a lot of pain, and we're trying not to have to deal with this pain. So we start blaming somebody else. It doesn't actually relieve the pain. You know, we're still carrying that same pain, but we like to blame other people. And as you just said, other people are also in a lot of pain. Other people are very wounded, very damaged.
Yes.
And blaming them is not going to help. And blaming ourselves is also not going to help. That's not going to help us move forward.
You have to resolve these issues that's causing these problems. And then, you know, if you're black, you're constantly seeing that this crap is happening in your family. Now, the youngest baby in the city of Chicago, and we're not drugs related or anything like that, was shot, and that was my family member. So how can somebody say, you know, oh, you shouldn't have that fear, that's within you? No, a blind man would have a feeling about his the youngest baby in his city being black, killed, you know? And then don't watch the news. You don't have to watch the news. You got no community and walk and witness it. So, you know, we got to jump off of that slave mentality and assert ourselves to rid the blight and crime in our own surroundings. So I had
The healing starts from within. We have to heal ourselves first. Then we can start healing our families. Then we can start healing our communities. And in the end, we can heal the whole world.
Exactly. I agree.
But it starts with self. I'm just going to see again if I can get this caller on the line. That would be good. I'm not sure who this is, but I do have my guess. Hi. Area code 646. Are you there? Hi. Welcome. Welcome. What's your name? Welcome to the show. Hi, are you with us? We're talking about African-American psychic trauma, and it doesn't just affect us as a people. It affects all communities, right? Our psychic trauma affects all communities.
Yeah. Well, we have so much violence in our
community.
Mm-hmm. I feel some trouble.
Sorry, can you repeat that? Sorry, I didn't get that.
Okay, we have so much violence upon us.
Yes, yes, absolutely, absolutely. But, I mean, you know, there's violence in every community. The question is, what can we do about it? What can we do to reduce it? Because I think that the violence in black communities is increasing. And I think that probably violence in other communities is also increasing.
Exactly.
So the question is, what can we do about it?
Well, we can offer those who have been affected by the violence some therapeutic services to start healing. Excuse me, to start healing, because it's a baby, you know, a little baby, and I was running a homeless shelter in the community. He was so traumatized, and he said, "Auntie Rashida, do you see that blood? It came from my father." And now his father had 12 bullets in him and still alive, thank God, in a wheelchair.
Wow.
But the baby was only 4 years old. And then he had stopped wetting on himself. So that baby needed therapy, you know? And then we had another one. And I had, through my foundation, a story of myself to reach out almost about 10 years ago. So I got the baby, then it was another baby, was sleeping in the house, and while he's sleeping, he'll be crying like somebody is beating him because of the trauma. So I'm with him. And so we need to start organizing precinct by precinct, I believe, to start addressing the issues, especially in the high blighted community and the high homicide community. The state does offer nonprofit because of my injury recently, they start giving opportunities, yeah, through our paperwork and stuff, to get treatment and they can assist families for those who can afford to go to a clinic. So the state will assist, especially among the violent incidents that people have incurred in their community. So there's services that we who know about it have to, you know, start organizing around our own housing, even though you don't see it and you're not traumatized because of it, but it is like that it is, and they do exist, and we would be sick to deny it. We have to start organizing it, even though I have recently said I am out here and I'm doing the best I can to help others, to help themselves and to help myself. So I have to do something. So that's what I like to present. And we're having an event on the website, as Mai said, promoting Black Love, and gathering those people who are interested to come, and I would like, love Naima to come and have a book there for vending. And she can generate some revenue, and then we could start get people exposed to the site of trauma. If they buy her book, and she can earn money. The booth line, $30 for a booth in the chair, and if you need electricity,
I got the booth with electricity and a chair. And that's May the 28th. And for the young people, Mr. Antwoord is our grand marshal. And he will, somebody smoking his drink. The grand marshal is Mr. Antwoord.
I'm sorry, sir, I'm only picking up about half of what you're saying. It's much clearer now because I think there was someone still got some background noise going on. So I've muted that person.
Okay. It's
I mean, one thing we need to do as part of the healing process, we need to do a lot of cleansing. Do you have any thoughts about how we can cleanse ourselves?
Yeah, well, we can have products. If you have healing products at our event, you can have a band there, and then any literature that you might have on the healing products, you can have offered to the people. It's going to be hundreds of people there in the park, bicycling and stuff like that. So I'll send a copy of the flyer to the Facebook.
Excellent.
To Naima so she can view it and whatever we can do to help.
Excellent. Thank you. And so when is this event happening?
May the 28th at the Austin and Jackson. And we're having giving bicycles for people to ride and then having the vending. So with the healing process, if any vendor is interested, they can go to Grassroots Professional Fundraiser website, like Google it, and all the information would be there.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's the best I could do. It takes each and every one to make it successful.
Yeah, it does. It does. But you see, I'm hearing more and more people saying that they're involved with nonviolence, which I think is beautiful. I think it's brilliant. More and more people, adults, are saying we want to help and support youth from experiencing so much violence. And that's all very, very positive. But I also see violence is on the increase. It seems to me, I mean, what do you think about Chicago? Do you think violence is on the increase there?
Yeah, it's a high. They said it has tripled the violence in the black community. Now, we have violence all over Illinois, et cetera, but 80% of the unsolved homicides, which is painful, black people. And that's a fact. It's real. Hate to say it, but, you know, we have to acknowledge what's going on and what the statistics say.
Yeah, we have to talk about it. We can't pretend it's not happening. This is the same way I feel about critical race theory. We can't pretend it's not still affecting us. You know, history still affects us.
Exactly. And
so we have to talk about it. And I understand over one weekend in Chicago, from what I've read, there are many, many killings. There are many, many murders in the black communities.
Yes, exactly. And it's real. The people are in denial. Because they're saying black and telling other people Black Lives Matter, but we are identifying something different. So I also have a show. It says Grassley says all lives matter because all lives do matter. The black people have given
reverence.
Of course
they do, but as I always say, all lives don't matter until Black Lives Matter.
Okay.
You know, and what's happening in our communities? This is an emergency situation. It doesn't affect every community in the same way that it affects us.
Yeah.
I live in a community that's very, very mixed.
All the persons tell me, I was listening in a group session, and it said, if somebody do any wrong to me, I'll kill them. I said, you know what? They teach their children that. And they teach their children to be aggressive like that toward their own people, then we have to do something reverse. Okay, these are the children to kill, verbally. And that's what I experienced. I literally went homeless because of some aggression and hate done by management in the building where I was living. And, and there was wrongfully evicted. They stole all of my belongings. And I didn't owe them any money. In Bronxville. And they put out, simply because I wear Afrocentric clothing, I don't wear them now. Because she had so much hate going, and of course now I lost everything because they stole it. But, you know, I don't hate them, but I still feel the pain. Black management.
Yes, yes.
Management,
yes.
A white real estate. They even put in a document that I was a threat to the whole building. I don't even know, but two people in the building. So, why did you, if your white management allow me to reside in your land building, why would you perpetrate something like that against someone that's not even having any conflict with you? Just because the way you look. So say, that's crazy.
Oh, yeah, but it's not just the way that people look. There's been so much brainwashing, right? And certain groups are excluded and certain groups are targeted as seen as causing the problems.
Yeah. And then we so, I don't know, primitive-minded, we associate success with what you have achieved and what you have and who you know. You can have all of that and still have a psychic trauma and then still could be hateful and hate other people. Innocent victims.
Yeah, but I also believe that it starts with self-hatred. You know, the reason why we are hating other people is that we're hating ourselves.
Exactly. I believe that too. Wholeheartedly.
So, yeah, so we agree on that, which is good. I like it. I like it when people agree with me. Lovely. But you don't have to agree with me. You know, I still welcome your call. If you would like to speak to me, I think my guest is joining us in a minute. The number is 515-605-9325. Excuse me. If you're outside of the United States, it is 001. You have to put an 001 in front of that number, which is 001-515-605-9325. And if you'd like to speak to me or to my guest, I believe Carthenia is joining us very shortly now. We've been emailing each other, but we're not necessarily communicating, which is what we need to be doing. We need to be communicating. So hopefully she's going to join us in a minute and she can tell us some information about what's happening in Alabama, because that's where she's based. She is she is from Black Women for Positive Change, and she is both a lawyer and a nurse. And, I mean, I find that fascinating personally. So we're going to be talking about violence reduction, including gun reduction, knife violence, and youth violence generally, and how we can reduce them. So in Britain, knife crime is more prevalent than gun crime, but both are on the increase. I'm just waiting for Carthenia to phone
in. That's interesting. Knife crime, you say knife crime is on the increase. See, everybody's focusing
on
guns.
Yes, both are. In Britain, both knife crime and gun crime are on the increase. But knife crime is far more prevalent than gun crime in this country.
So that lets us know we can't just focus on getting rid of guns. You have to get rid of the violence in the hearts of the people, because they can use anything as a weapon.
Yeah. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And it starts with us. It starts with you and me. You know, because we have a tendency to point at the thing and say, no, the problem's over there. No, it's not. The problem's not over there. The problem is right over here. So, you know, this is where it has to start. It has to start with the self. Now, Carthenia, I'm hoping, is going to join us in a minute. She is from National Black Nurses Association, and she's chair of the Committee on Violence Reduction. So they have an ad hoc committee on violence reduction, and that's very interesting. I want to hear their views and, you know, what they can contribute, because this is what I'm finding. There are more and more people I'm speaking to who are busy working for nonviolence, working against violence, working to support the youth, and that's all good, but I'm not really sure what effect it's having, because it seems to me that violence is on the increase. And I know that in Britain, gun crime and knife crime are both on the increase. So, you know, what can we do about that? What can we do about that? I really don't know.
Has
that,
anybody,
you know, it's got me very worried. It's got me very worried. And then, as you were saying earlier, then there's what's happening on a global scale, which has got me absolutely terrified, because this is ultimately what happens. I mean, war is the ultimate expression of violence, and it's the most destructive form of violence. And we see these pictures every day on the news about what is happening in Ukraine. And it's just terrifying. And it could happen here. We could have bombs falling on London soon. I didn't think this was ever going to happen in my lifetime. I don't know. What do you ladies think? Were you expecting this to happen in our lifetimes?
I didn't think we'd have another war, just because people understand the finality of a nuclear war. You know, I didn't think it would ever get to a point where they're really considering using war when you've got the United Nations and, you know, supposedly there's more peace talk. But, you know, war is also a business, because there are war industries that want to keep making profits, so they don't really want
That's
peace.
Right.
They want to keep selling arms.
That's right. There's a lot of money to be made in war. At the moment, people are raising money in Britain to send to Ukraine. People are buying weapons to send to Ukraine. And yes, sometimes it's necessary to use arms in order to, you know, to protect our communities. But me, personally, I'm more in favor of prevention. And that's one of the things about NBC. That's one of the things about nonviolent communication, is that I think it can be used in a conflict, but particularly it's very, very good for prevention. You know, it doesn't have to get this far. It does not have to get this far. So I don't really understand what's going on now, but I think it's time for another little break. Shall we have another little break now?
We have an opportunity to transform the whole global society in the next 50 years. 50 years from now, the Earth will be populated by a new generation of adults, many of whom are yet unborn. Our mission is to nurture them in childhood with love, guidance, and protection, and to raise them in healthy, happy families. If we impart values of compassion, generosity, and respect for fellow human beings in the next generation of children, they will create a world where people can live together in peace. This is our goal. Be a part of the transformation. Get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. Go to www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com.
Okay, well, I just took off my lawn. Do you want to live in a world without war? Join our global peace movement. Heavenly Culture World Peace Restoration of Light transcends culture, religion, ideology, and other boundaries to achieve peaceful harmony in the global society. HWPL is committed to bringing world peace and cessation of war through peaceful dialogue between religious groups. I am Director Shin-Suk Kim of the HWPL Chicago Branch of North America. Join us for our next gathering. Call 773-580-1501 and be a part of the movement for world peace. Email us at chicagohwpl@gmail.com.
Are you constantly arguing with your spouse? Are your children misbehaving and acting out? Is someone in your family abusing drugs? Have you been the victim of domestic violence? Are you grieving over the loss of a loved one? Let us help you restore serenity to your life. At Serenity Family Social Services, we understand that good mental health is the result of emotional well-being. Our goal is to assist you and your family in removing emotional distress and restoring harmony and balance to your lives. We offer individual, couples, and family counseling. I'm Howard Williams, CEO of Serenity Family Social Services. Call us today at 312-315-4820. That's 312-315-4820.
Okay, and we're back. So this is still Success Strategies with Jada, and we are talking about youth violence, particularly gun violence in the States and knife violence in Britain. I was speaking earlier about an incident that happened in Hyde Park in London a few months ago, where a whole bunch of young people were attacked this one young guy. And a whole bunch of people attacked this one young guy, and they were carrying knives, they were carrying all kinds of implements, and it was just really scary to me. I mean, I wasn't there, but just thinking that that this is how young people are behaving now, and I don't know how much of that is to do with you know, the fact that we've been in lockdown for so many years. I mean, about 2 years we were in lockdown. And the fact that, you know, children are experiencing a lot of mental health problems. Adults are also experiencing an increase in mental health problems. Children are experiencing more abuse. And adults are also experiencing more abuse because we're, you know, shut up in a home together, you know, and people weren't able to go out for weeks and months sometimes. I'm just trying to do an email and talk at the same time. No. This is challenging.
You know, one of the things I was thinking, Jana, because you talk about nonviolent communication and the fact that people just learn how to settle differences using some existing tools that would help. But also, when you have a situation where people are selling these very violent video games, listening to very violent-based music, and we keep talking about it, but nobody is deciding, look, this is not helpful, let's just stop, you know, because it's a business. It's kind of like the stupidity of doing the thing that causes you a problem, but you won't stop doing the thing. So at some point, you have to collectively decide to stop doing the thing that creates the violent spirit and just stop. You know, stop making excuses for it.
Yes.
Stop calling it something, oh, freedom of speech.
We need something better.
If
we
you don't want to keep dying,
we need to let go
anything.
Of something. We need to have something to hold on to. And the thing is, what I really love about nonviolent communication is that it's about connecting. It's about connecting from the heart, and it's about empathy. It's about connecting with feelings and needs, right? Our own feelings and needs and other people's feelings and needs. So it's not just about saying stop. I mean, stopping is important. Stopping is important, but what are we going to put in the place of that? And what NVC offers us is an opportunity to connect with feelings and needs. So,
yeah
that's why I love it so much, because it's about coming from the heart. It's about connecting from the heart. And you can actually connect from the heart with anybody. It doesn't matter who they are, where they live, what they look like, or what they do, or what they have done. We can still connect with others and with ourselves and our own experience. And that is just so beautiful. When we manage to do that, it's just so beautiful. And as I keep saying, you need to have the skills. Parents need to have these skills. Carers, teachers, educators need to have these skills. And, you know, that would just completely change the way we are in the world at the moment. You see, I don't really understand about what Putin's doing and why he's doing it. And people say that he's crazy. Well, maybe he is. I don't know. You know, I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm not going to try and diagnose the guy. But certainly the way he's behaving, it appears to me to be insane. And, we, you know, sometimes we all are. Sometimes we're all out of control. Sometimes we lash out at others. Sometimes we blame others. Sometimes we lash out at ourselves. Sometimes we blame ourselves. None of these are particularly helpful behaviors, but we do them. We all do them. So it's a question of what we're going to put. Yeah. Go for it.
So I have a question. Maybe you and Rashida have an opinion about this. At some point, you have to bring in the people who actually create the problem. How do you see bringing in those young people who have either been caught committing acts of violence, who are serving time for committing violence, and having them be able to express their reasons for why they did what they did? Because we're all assuming, they're just bad, or they're just out of control, or they need more discipline. We're making assumptions, and nobody's listening to what they're saying.
Yeah, I agree.
Can find out what happened.
And we're not connecting with feelings and needs, because the reason, according to NVC, the reason why we do everything we do is in order to connect, in order to meet a need. And the reason why everybody else does what they do is in order to meet a need. So I think we need to stop seeing people as problems or as creating problems. And we need to see people as people who are trying to get their needs met. But the way that they're using it, the way they're trying to get their needs met, that's what we're not happy about. We're not happy about the message that they're using. You get me?
Yes.
You get me?
I think what we should do, get writers, journalists, and organizations together to put together a proposal to present to the Cook County penal system and also to the juvenile detention, addressing those needs to give those people conferences and meetings so that they can express themselves. And it's very easy to do. It just takes team that with similar goals and interests to put together a proposal and submit it and say, well, we're going to contract our services and we want to address this specific targeted group, because they take a service contract at the in Cook County. But when I was out there doing service with my nonprofit, what I did, I had wrote a proposal to the superintendent of the Cook County Correctional Center. And I had in my proposal offered service to stop them from smoking in the cell,
because the commissary department was selling those rolling up tobacco, and the people would come out of the cell and go straight to the table and start with a pencil and a paper and rolling a cigarette. And then they had constant conflicts. So fighting and even offering cigarettes for marriage to each other. So I put together a proposal because I thought it was crazy. And they stopped selling cigarettes in the commissary. Roll them up. And now they have a ban coming up on even in the community. Stop selling menthol cigarettes because they said that it's causing cancer in most African Americans. So, but they allowed to make billions and billions of dollars, but here we come victimized again. So, but the simple thing to do is get teams, set down a committee meeting, agree to a proposal and submit it to those institutions. And then at least you get that targeted group. So after they come, because in the United States, they are considered being incarcerated as not being homeless. And they pay the human system so much money. And they also give opportunity for those who are professional though, and organizations to submit proposals. If they can,
Rashida, is that that's, I think that sounds very positive. What I'm concerned about is the way we talk to each other, right, and the way we listen to each other. This is what I keep going on about NVC, right, nonviolent communication. It's to do with the way we communicate, because we can actually solve these problems, right? We can actually address and solve these issues. It depends on how we talk to each other and how we listen to each other. You get me?
Yeah.
And if you go to my site, Blogging Commonwealth for Nonviolence, sorry to cut you, Rashida. If you go into my site for Blogging Commonwealth for Nonviolence, on the resources page, there's loads of resources that I've listed, which are to do with learning NVC and using NVC. And we can actually change these situations depending on the way that we talk to each other and the way that we listen to each other. Once we have the skills, we can actually change these situations. We can actually transform them. And people are doing this all over the world.
And that's a good thing, I believe.
Yeah, do check out my resources page on the Blogging Carnival for Nonviolence, because I've got loads of resources there. I've got interviews with NVC authors. I've got a whole bunch of different resources on there. Okay, well, it's been lovely talking to you and listening with you, Rashida. Stay with us, please. I don't know what's happened to my guests, because they don't seem to be appearing. I don't really understand why. I have emailed a few times, but I've not.
If you want to text me their phone numbers, Jonna, why don't you text me?
Sorry?
If you can, text me their phone numbers and I can call them.
Oh, I just did. I texted it to you about 5 minutes ago.
you texted me? Okay.
Yeah, I did.
So their phone numbers. Okay, well, I'll give them a call and see what's happening with them. They may not have the call number
thank
of the
you
show.
Because I can't call them at the moment because...
Right. So I'll call them.
Because I'm actually hooked up to this show on my phone. So once again, it's actually doing what it's supposed to do at the moment, which makes a nice change.
I'll call them.
But it's not perfect.
I'll call them from
my
other phone.
It's far from perfect. But life isn't perfect, you know. Sometimes we just have to live with that and do the best we can.
Absolutely. But now one thought before I get off the phone to call them. One thing I wanted to suggest, we got all these peace conferences coming up, and you know everybody's going to talk about, oh, it's terrible, we need to have peace. What about if we have a conference with those who have committed violent acts and talk to them and more importantly listen to them? And find out, like you say, everybody's expressing needs. What is it that they need? What are they trying to get out of their actions, and what are they reacting to? And we can just listen that perspective. So I think I'm going to work on that, because I think that's something within our power to do, and give people a platform to talk about it, not judging them, not condemning them, just trying to understand.
Exactly, because this is the problem. We start getting into judging and blaming, then we kind of lose track of our goal, which is to create peace. Judging and blaming does not create peace.
So you have to understand what causes people to disturb the peace. And a lot of times people do things, they're not, you know, whatever the stereotype of a criminal is. They're just some regular person that snapped at some point.
That's right. Or they've been pushed too far by their circumstances.
So I think when you
have someone going to the shops to do their shopping and somebody kills them and then says, well, I shot the guy because I was scared of black people. That really doesn't help. I'm sorry, but it doesn't. That does not help. I'm not even sorry, actually.
But, you know, a lot of times people not say, well, they say, I feared for my life. Well, why? Because they were black. How's that affecting you? You know, they're minding their own business. So what's inside your mind that is twisted or altered so that you don't have a clear perception of reality and you're responding to a
reality? That's right. And we may have answered that question already because we're all watching the same TV shows, the same films.
Right.
You know, many people are playing the same video games and so forth. And, you know, we're watching the same commercials. So we're being bombarded with this information every day. You know, every day we're being bombarded with these negative images and negative stereotypes every single day. Message from Carthenia, and she's asking me what number to call, and I'll repeat what number you need to call. If you want to speak to me or if you want to speak to my guest, the number is 515-605-9325. And if you're outside the United States, you have to put an 001 in front of that. So it's 001. Oh, my goodness, I've just lost it. No, where is it going? Okay, here we go. 001-515-605-9325. So, yeah, please do call in. We want to hear from you. We want to hear your thoughts. We want to know what solutions you want to suggest. I know we've got some solutions out there. We know there's a lot of problems, but there's also solutions. So, you know, we want to hear from you. We want to hear your thoughts. Are you dealing with violence? Are you dealing with violence in your own community? Or are you dealing with violence, you know, in your own family or in other families as part of your work or as part of your life? We really want to know your thoughts. What do you think? What do you think about the increase in violence, and particularly the increase in violence in young people? Because this is the next generation now, you know. This is the next generation we're talking about. And they are soon going to be producing another generation. So they're going to be parents before too long. Some of them probably parents already. So, you know, we need to break this pattern. We need to break the cycle. How can we do that? Now, I've got a caller on the line. I'm hoping this is Carthenia. Area code 205.
This is
Hi,
Carthenia.
Welcome to the show. This is Jana speaking. Who's calling, please?
This is Carthenia.
Oh, welcome, wonderful. You made it. We've been having some technical difficulties today, some technical challenges, but I'm really glad you've joined us. Welcome. And this is your second time on my show.
You.
So how are you today, Carthenia?
I am fine. I thought I was supposed to be calling in at 5, so I guess we got the times mixed up as well.
Never mind. You're here now. That's the most important thing. So I've been telling all my listeners about you, everyone. This is Carthenia Jefferson. Is it Esquire ESQ?
It is.
And she's also a registered nurse. She's also a family and juvenile law attorney, so you know this lady is very, very busy. She's also from the NBNA, National Black Nurses Association, and she's chair of the Committee on Violence Reduction. So welcome, welcome, Carthenia. Carthenia is also from a member of Black Women for Positive Change, which I am as well. And she's the Black Women for Positive Change NBNA and Alabama liaison. So she keeps very busy. I'm not going to go through everything you've done and all your accolades because, we will get to them in the course of the conversation. So welcome, welcome. So what I'm wondering, first of all, Carthenia, is what's the connection between the NBNA and youth violence, and why does the NBNA have an ad hoc committee on violence reduction?
Wow. Well, first I want to thank you for inviting me on behalf of the National Black Nurses Association and Black Women for Positive Change to join you today on your show. But the connection between the National Black Nurses Association and youth violence and why we have a violence reduction committee is because there is so much violence going on in the world today. And then that violence trickles down and affects our youth. Our youth
Tell us a bit about
help.
Okay. I'm really glad you said that. So tell me, what's the state of violence and particularly youth violence in Alabama right now? And do you think the situation is getting worse?
Yes. Youth violence in Alabama and in the United States is getting worse. Reasons, there are several reasons. One of those is poverty. Another one is that lack of resources. Another is that it's guns are so readily available on the streets.
Because you see, in Britain, guns are not that readily available, but we do have gun violence, and it's only increased. And we also have knife violence, which is more prevalent than gun violence in this country, but they're both on the increase.
Yes, they are.
So would you say that poverty is on the increase in the United States?
Well, we're still in COVID. We're not out of COVID. So we're still in this COVID-19 area, arena. And then we also have the rising inflation in the United States. I don't know if we're having having that in the UK, but the rise in inflation.
No, definitely. It's really frightening because they're saying it might go to 10% this year.
Yes, yes. I mean, you go to the gas station, gas is almost $5. You go to the grocery store, groceries are 10 to 20%, and then school supplies and things like that. Everything has gone up tremendously.
Right.
And then when you have these rising prices and rising inflation and persons that who already have a lack of resources tend to get in more trouble because they're trying to get some of those resources that they don't have.
So you think that's what's contributing to increase in violence?
I think that it's one of the things that has been contributing to the increase in violence. But the other is
the
availability of guns. Yes?
The availability of guns, is that what you said?
I did. The ready availability of guns. Yes. And it's so easy for a youth to get a gun. I mean, that kills people. That is so sad.
Well, see, I'm from New York originally, and we have really, really strict gun laws, just like we have in Britain. So when I hear these things, because, I mean, I remember years ago watching Bowling for Columbine, and he would say, you can just go into Walmart and buy a gun and buy bullets. And anybody can do that. Children can do that. I just find that so shocking.
It is shocking. And then the gun laws that they are making, we know everybody has a First Amendment right. We're not trying to deny them that First Amendment right. So in working with Moms Demand Action, Everytown mm-hmm. USA, trying to get the word out that it's bad law to have this access or to not limit the access to guns. Because
absolutely.
And get persons to support legislation as well as Black Women for Positive Change and the National Black Nurses Association, trying to get the word out to encourage our legislators to change these laws and restrict these this ready availability of guns on the streets, ready availability of guns to youth, children. These are children.
Yes, I know.
I mean,
I know.
Their
it's
mindset.
Terrible.
It is. It's so terrible.
Yes, I completely agree.
I
find it really
get
shocking.
Get some of these gun laws passed. If we can get some of these gun laws passed in the United States, because you, like you
mm-hmm.
said, you already have them in the UK. But if we can get
mm-hmm.
some of them passed in the United States, I think that will limit the ready availability of guns on the street, especially to youth.
Well, I know that's what President Obama said that he wanted to see happen, but it hasn't happened. But you see, as I also said, yes, you know, guns are restricted, very, very restricted in the UK, but gun crime is still on the increase. And knife crime is the biggest problem, and it's also on the increase. So what is the connection between this and the NBNA?
Well, the NBNA, the National Black Nurses Association, we are working all across our chapters. We have chapters in the United States and outside the United States, Virgin Islands.
Okay.
And we are working to try to reduce gun violence by supporting legislation. Because when President Obama was president, he cannot do it by himself. That in the United
that's
States,
right,
we have
right.
Congress. We have senators, and we have House of Representatives. And when those legislators vote against gun laws, then President Obama himself cannot pass a gun law. We have three branches.
Yeah, that's right.
We have the legislative branch. We have the judicial branch, which is made up of jurors. So we have the executive branch, which is President Obama was. Now we have President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris are part of us. But the legislation can be introduced. But it's up to the senators and the House of Representatives to pass that legislation president
do you think that's
of the United
happen?
States can sign off on it. They won't pass.
Do you think that's going
to
happen?
That's to the senators. Excuse me?
I said, do you think that that will happen, that gun laws are going to be passed?
We are trying very hard to push our legislators, encourage our legislators, encourage persons in our communities to vote for competent legislators who will pass these laws to help stop this, decrease this gun violence, because we know not only is youth violence and gun violence on the rise, these mass shootings in the United States on the rise. Mass shootings, you almost hear about
different people. That's really shocking.
And mass shootings involve at least two or more persons getting killed. So that is on the rise. So, yes, we hope that we can encourage our legislators, our senators, and our House of Representatives to pass legislation to help curb some of the gun violence, if not stop it.
But, Carcini, I know that there are people. I mean, look at the actor, Charlton Heston, right? He used to be head of the NRA, didn't he, when he was alive? And he said, you're going to have to pry my gun from my cold, dead hand. And I know there's still people who are like that. There are people who are clinging to their guns and clinging to their right to own guns. So what chance do you think that there is there for legislation to be passed?
Well, as I stated previously, we're not trying to stop people from having that Second Amendment right.
Right.
Yes, you have a right to bear arms, but to have those arms in your car that is unlocked, to have those guns readily available, not stored properly where children can get to them, that's a problem. That's a serious problem.
Right.
So, I say that Moms Demand Action, National Black Nurses Association, Black Women for Positive Change, we are out there trying to educate our citizens. So, our citizens, when though elections do come up, they can elect competent persons that are knowledgeable in these areas of gun safety, and not trying to stop persons to bear arms, especially in their own home, but for gun safety. That's what we are trying to encourage. And if our legislators, the senators and House of Representatives can get together and understand that and vote accordingly on some of these restrictive gun safety, not restricting gun rights, but gun safety, then I think we will come a long ways in reducing the violence country in the United States and with our youth and stopping some of these mass shootings.
Okay, Carthina, so here's my thing, okay? I'm going to just say this, and I'm going to ask you for your response, right? My thought is if we can learn to communicate with each other, really connect with each other, and listen to each other, and respect each other, then we won't need to have guns anymore. We won't need to protect ourselves because we'll have a very different society. What do you think about that?
Well, Zane, I believe we should agree to disagree, and communication is a problem. It's a problem with our country, not only with citizens, but with our congresspersons. We have two main parties, the Republican Party and the Democratic Party. So those parties sometimes look like they can't even communicate, talk to one another with dignity and respect. And
I agree. Well, you want to see what the parliament is like in Britain. Oh, my goodness. And they behave like children. I'm thinking, you people, you know, starting from the prime minister on down, I'm thinking, you people, you know, you're supposed to be role models for the next generation. Look at the way you're behaving. You're behaving like children.
Yes.
We can't really rely on them to set an example. I think we have to be the example ourselves.
Yes, we do. And it's like you say, it starts with us. It starts with us working together. And you may have some problems, but you will have less problems.
I agree.
We can learn to work together.
Because I want to live in society where we don't need to have guns. You know, we don't need to protect ourselves from each other. Where we can live together in harmony and in community and in connection.
Zane, I wish we could do that, live together in harmony, live together in connection, and learn that we are all, I mean, just have some compassion and humanity, towards one another, and learn to listen. As you stated earlier, listening and communicating, listening is a skill, and we must learn to do that, to listen to one another so we can work out our differences.
Yeah, because listening is not the same as agreeing. We don't have to agree with someone in order to listen to them.
No, you do not.
But I think listening can make a huge difference. You don't really have empathy without listening.
And that is so true. In Black Women for Positive Change, we try to – we have our co-chairs, Dr. Stephanie Miles and Don Hester, they have us to have a talk or a session every week, and we have somebody to come on and talk about strategies, how we can reduce violence in certain areas, what can we do to be effective leaders, to get the word out, to communicate to our to have community health fairs on nonviolence, to have voter case so we can elect the right people in our Congress, so they can pass effective gun safety legislation. So, I mean, those talks are very informative. We have them every Wednesday. So the National Black Nurses Association, the Black Women for Positive Change, you, Zane, working together, all of us working together, I think can effect change in some way to reduce this violence in our communities, to reduce this violence with our youth, and to help us all be better productive citizens.
That is so positive as a message, because the fact is there's new young people coming up now, and as I was saying a little while ago, that's the next generation, and then they're going to be producing another generation very soon. So, you know, if we continue on this path of violence, if it continues to escalate, what does the future look like then for young people? What does the future look like? So can you tell us a bit of how the National Black Nurses Association first get involved in campaigning around youth violence?
The way the National Black Nurses Association is getting involved, we have partners like you. We have partners like the Black Women for Positive Change. We have partners like Moms Demand Action, Everytown USA. We have partners like the Lost Women's Foundation.
I'd like to know how it started, though. How did you
work together to
get involved?
We encourage persons to get involved, and that's why we have some of these sessions, like we have the Black Women for Positive Change on every Wednesday. Have sessions.
What I'd like to know is, how did you first start to get involved in dealing with violence and youth violence and gun violence?
Well, one thing to get involved in your communities, with organizations, like I said, the National Black Nurses Association, we are available. You can go to nbna.org, and you can look and see our different chapters. You look at our chapter directory, and you can see if you have a National Black Nurses Association chapter in your area. Get involved. If you're not a nurse, We encourage you to contact us if you would like for us to come and do educational sessions with you. Also, Black Women for Positive Change. Go to that website, blackwomenforpositivechange.org.
That's excellent. But I was just wondering, what is the story behind you getting involved in the first place?
Oh, what is the story behind me getting involved?
NBNA. How did you first start getting involved with violence?
I started getting involved with violence because I am a nurse, and I've done pediatric nursing, working with children in the hospitals. I've done I am an attorney. I have done, and I do family law and juvenile law. And I see so much, and I am so concerned about our youth. And that's why I have gotten involved and started my son's foundation in honor of my son who's deceased, the Lawrence Munn Jefferson Jr. Foundation. Our mission is to work to help grow boys and girls, at-risk boys and girls in particular, into real men and women. And the REAL acronym stands for Responsible, Empowered Achievers and Leaders. Our young people need guidance.
So important. That is really beautiful.
Yes, they need guidance.
That is really beautiful. Thank you for that, Kathy.
And want to help give them some focus.
Yeah, absolutely. And can you tell me, please, tell us a bit about the Lawrence Munn Jefferson Jr. Foundation. Actually, you know what? We need to break for just a couple of minutes for commercials, and then we'll come back to that because I want to hear more about this from you. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
With a simple blood test and food plan, Suthan Essentials will help your business, your family, and you eliminate toxins and create a step-by-step plan to nourish your mind, body, and spirit. Click here to learn more.
Everything you need, what your body needs, is found in nature. So Suthan Essentials doesn't do it any other way.
Suthan Essentials leads you to wellness by giving you access to more than 20,000 sustainably produced nutritional products delivered direct to your door.
Suthan Essentials is re-engineering what health looks like by leading you to the best wellness initiatives in the world. Start your coaching plan today and create a new paradigm of health. Click here to learn more. Susan Essentials is
We're back. Sorry, Jody. Yes, we're back. So tell us a bit about the Lawrence Mon Jefferson Jr. Foundation. How did that come about?
Well, my son, Lawrence Jefferson Jr., he passed in 2015 unexpectedly. And he loved working with children. Oh. He loved mentoring children. And so after he passed, we started the foundation in his honor to help children, in particular at-risk children. And we do a lot of focus on our children in our foster homes. It's a lot of children that people don't even realize that are in foster homes, and it's a lot of at-risk children out there. We have children having children. So we try to focus more on the at-risk children to help them and lead them and guide them so they can grow up to be responsible young citizens. And that is our focus. We provide mentoring activities. We provide social activities. We provide a lot of resources, such as with the foster homes, in food, clothing. We provide one-on-one, not just we're able to provide one-on-one with the help of the Birmingham Black Nurses Association and other organizations that help us to mentor these young kids.
Okay, and how do you identify young people who are at risk?
Well, we get the word out that about the foundation, and we know that a lot of the children in the foster care system are at-risk kids. We know we have children in our own churches and in our own communities that are at-risk kids, and we have persons to introduce them kids to us. So we do, like I said, we do a lot of work with the foster care system and the foster homes in particular. And like I said, we
and
try
how do
to get
you know
the word out. We have children
are at risk. What are some of the signs that they're at risk?
The signs that they're at risk, as I was talking to one of the foster moms this week, the children get in the system, in the DHR, Department of Human Resources. That's what we call it here in Alabama. Mm-hmm. Some of them get in the system because of dependency. That means they don't have someone to, a mother, father, that is able to provide the care that they need to provide for these kids, and somehow they may end up in the Department of Human Resource system, or sometimes they are delinquent. Children that just get into crimes that, well, whether it would be a crime if they were an adult of age, 19 years of age, but sometimes right now, because of the actions or the crime itself, they are deemed to be adults. So they get in a system.
Oh, really?
Some
get tried as adults.
Some of them
they get tried as adults.
14 years of age or above. If they're 14 years of age and above and they do certain crimes, yes, they can be tried as adults. But the majority of the times they are tried they are tried as a youth. But if is it murder, something of that sort, they can be tried as adults. And it just depends on the particular charge that they have and their background. Say if they've been a child that's been has so many crimes or charges against them, a child that has been in the streets, homeless, that has been struggling, those kids, some of those are brought to our attention. So, like I said, we try to provide the mentoring, the guidance that we can, and try to get these children the resources that they need so they can do better in life and have a better chance at being a good, productive citizen and having a good life.
I get that, yeah, because I was really surprised, to be totally honest with you, Kathleen, I was very surprised to find out that you're in Alabama, because I tend to think of these problems as being problems to do with the urban north, you know, cities like New York and Chicago, or even somewhere out west like L.A. I don't tend to
think
of these
problems. They happen here in Alabama.
problems in the
right
deep south, but you're telling me that they are.
Yes,
so
they
that's
are.
A surprise. But you
she's
see, I always say I learn something new every day.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. So they're out there, and we are here to provide help. Like I said, sometimes they're brought to our attention through different persons. So we thank people for being concerned about our youth, because that's what it takes, all of us loving on them, all of us helping them, all of us providing positive guidance, having a positive impact on their lives, and being good role models. Because I like to tell people, even when you think people are not watching you, especially children, they are. They're watching everything you do. They're listening to everything you say.
Absolutely.
And sometimes they will try to role play you. So please be a positive role model. Please be a positive role model. And please be willing to listen. Listen to our children first before you talk to them. And don't always judge them. Don't always judge them. I see that happens a lot with adults. Judging children, stereotyping children.
That's right.
Try to
I completely agree with you. Well, in nonviolent communication, we try not to judge and not to blame. I mean, it's a natural human tendency to judge and to blame, but it's really not helpful.
It's not
helpful. It doesn't help the situation. But you see, the thing is, underneath the judgment and underneath the blaming are unmet needs. So we can actually get to the point of talking about the needs underneath the underneath the blaming and the judging, then we can start to, you know, make progress with the communication.
Yes, yes. Well, you can make be, like I said, effective listener first, and then communicate. Communication is a key to working with anybody, not just children, with anybody. Being willing
That's
to
right,
listen.
And the first bit of communication, as you just said, is listening, right?
Mm-hmm.
Before speaking, the first bit of communication that we need is to listen.
Yes, very much so, and especially with children, because a lot of times we say we're listening to them, but we are already ready to say something and without
that's
really
right.
listening
Before we start.
To what they
yeah.
want. Now, their needs or their concerns, and that's the same way we do each other sometimes. So be willing
no,
to
you're
listen.
Absolutely right. I completely
be willing
agree
and then
with you.
Communicate with our children and provide a positive impact. Say a positive statement to them and keep a smile on your face so they can keep smiling, because they are children. And sometimes when they look like adults, we think they're not children or we don't treat them like children, but they are children. And they need, they're yearning for our help.
So,
I have a question
for
your guest, Jana. Hi.
Yeah, go for it,
Naima. Yes, I have a question for your guest. Sorry, maybe just started more than long since I started talking. Karthenia, thank you so much for joining us. I've been concerned about a lot of mental illness that I see among young people, and it seems like young people have an extraordinary amount of stress that they live with, which is unnatural for children. As a nurse, what signs have you seen, you know, behaviors that are definitely not childlike? You know, I mean, there's the violence, but then there's other things that I think are indicative of trauma that we don't see, because, you know, we tend to punish rather than seek to listen and understand, as you all have been saying. So what are some of the things that you've seen in terms of childhood behavior that you know is not appropriate for that particular age and might be signs of some deeper emotional trauma?
Well, I have worked at Children's Hospital in the Behavior Disorder Unit, which is also called the psych unit, and I think the behaviors that we have seen in children, I have seen in children, is some of them are inattentive, where then you have some of them that act out. When I say act out, they always look like they're getting into trouble. In school, they may be very talkative, or the classroom clown, and we know sometimes that these behaviors are not normal with children. And then, like I say, some of them just
Majority just want attention. They're crying out for our help, but we don't listen. We don't observe. We don't take action. You got to observe these kids. The mental illness is there. The problems are there. Kids do get depressed. Kids do get depressed. Not, but I just think if they need help, they need to. They need a counselor, a willing ear, and then some of them may need medication. But I have a real concern when I'm talking about medicating children because sometimes they are over-medicated. Do you understand what I'm saying? When they're walking around like they've been a day all the time.
Like zombies.
On certain medications, over-medicated. So I have a problem with that. But children do get depressed. Children do have mental issues, and they do need help. They need all of our help. They need love. They need kindness. They need compassion. They need understanding. And as I have repeatedly said, they need somebody to listen to them, to listen to their concerns. I hope I've answered your question.
It just breaks my heart. Things that you're talking about, Carthenia, they just break my heart. They really do.
Yes, it breaks my heart, too. But you can make a difference. You can make a difference. Everyone
Make
a difference.
Something you said that kind of rings a bell. You know, when you talk about children acting out in school, the class clown, that kind of person. And back when I was teaching, I remember there were a number of young people who always were crying for attention. But what happened is that they would get punished. And I guess negative attention is better than no attention. But no one ever talked to them to find out what was happening in their homes. And sometimes when I would have a conversation with children after they've been sent to the principal's office, I find out, you know, their parents are going through a divorce or there's a new baby in the house or, you know, some kind of life-changing event for them that they were stressed about. But they didn't have a way to say, I'm really stressed about my parents getting a divorce or, you know, my mother's new boyfriend or my father's new girlfriend or, you know, I'm being treated kind of bad because they got a new baby and they're ignoring me. I mean, you know, we're not listening to what they're going through. Or we're just seeing the effects of it. So what advice would you give to, say, teachers who are seeing children misbehave? How do they ask the right questions to find out what the problem really is?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question because teachers are involved with our children at least six to eight hours, depends on what school system you're in, almost every day. So you see things. And if this child has been in your classroom, you kind of know that child just like you know your own child. So you can see where they've been making good grades and now they're making bad grades. That's a sign. Because something is wrong. Why have they dramatically changed from making an A to making a D? They have been sitting in the front of the class. Now they want to sit in the back of the class and talk. Why are these children hanging with certain kids they didn't used to hang with that always get in trouble? Why are these children that used to be quiet not so very talkative in the class clown, as I stated? You can make a difference by taking that child or seeing that child is their problem. Sometimes they're not going to tell you right off because they, what our children were told, you don't tell our business. But if you just take the time out, just let the child know that I'm here for you if you do want to talk. And sometimes some of them will talk to you because they are so stressed out. You got children at home raising other children because the parents, the parents or the one parent that's in the house is working two and three jobs. So they're stressed out, and they need our help.
Yeah.
Sometimes they come to school. You can see the child is hungry. Ain't been need some food. You know.
Yeah,
what
I know. A lot of times,
kids come to school hungry. In the summertime, they go hungry because they don't.
They
don't get that one meal a day from school.
That's really shocking.
Right. You got a caller before we go, Jana, 314-677.
Oh gosh, I've been so busy listening to Carthenia. Let me see who's on the line.
Yeah, just
hi,
say
welcome to the show. This is Jana. Who's calling, please?
Yeah, a lot of that type of responsibility
should fall on neighborhood organizations and the churches. You know, Annie Malone Children's Home here in St. Louis, Annie Malone was the first black female millionaire, not C.J. Walker. That children's home looked like a small city of black kids.
Really?
Why is that? Because don't nobody adopt black kids. They go in there young and come out when they're 21. So that's where you have organizations already established. The people should get behind that. Churches should get behind, not the federal government. People in churches should get behind those type of concerns and work with them. You know, you got more whites that come in to Annie Malone and adopt black kids than black people do.
Really?
I guess that's all right.
I'm sure they love their children, but they're not necessarily equipped with the skills to look after a black child. They don't understand.
Yes, they are too. From what I witnessed, that's not true. They adopt and raise.
Oh, I've seen it over and over again.
They adopt and raise children that turned out to be marvelous citizens. There's a lot of cases here in the St. Louis area. So that stuff about the human beings. That's what they are.
Yes, of course.
Thank you.
But there are human beings, but there are certain things that black children go through that white people have no clue about. That's what we were talking about earlier, about the denial. Right? They want to pretend that our history doesn't still have an impact on us. I'm not saying every white person, and I am not saying every white parent, but I have seen it many, many times.
Well, this is Carpedia.
Those are my thoughts.
I agree and I disagree to a certain extent.
Okay.
All children need love.
They all need to
feel wanted somewhere. Yes, a Caucasian person, a person of not of the same race as a child, have some differences, but and most of those are cultural differences. So yes, they will have some challenges in adopting and raising a child that's not of their ethnicity, but the love that they can provide, I think that really outweighs the challenges. And a lot of times Caucasian persons or persons of different races adopt children, and they have to learn the culture of that child, because the child needs to know their own culture. Because otherwise,
well, I think if white parents are doing
that,
very positive thing, but I don't see them necessarily doing that.
They're not used to being around black kids, or they're not used to being around white kids, and then they go to college and then get a culture shock. So, but my main concern in that what the gentleman said is I think persons of different races can raise kids that are not of their own race. But it does have its challenges.
Yeah, it does have its challenges. Anyway, I'm so glad that you managed to join us and get on the call. I would love to have you on again at some point to hear more about your work. Just very, very quickly, can you tell us about your event that's coming up on the 17th of May?
On May 17th at 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, 6 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time. We are partnering with Moms Demand Action Every Time USA to offer a webinar on youth and gun violence. So I would like for Zaina to please put that on her blog so you can join us on the webinar. The National Black Nurses Association, Black Women for Positive Change, Lawrence Munn Jefferson Jr. Foundation, all of those are sponsors of this upcoming webinar. And we would love to have you join us. And thank you, Zane, again. Thank you for inviting us on your show.
Thank you so much for being my guest. I would love to have you on again.
Thank you. And everybody, happy Mother's Day to all the mothers.
Come to the end of our show today.
but you can hear every show in the archives at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution. You can also hear today's show on the Female Solution Facebook page. Go to www.facebook.com/thefemalesolution. Leave your comments about today's show. You can always reach me on my website at www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com. Watch our TV shows, listen to our radio shows, order our books, and be sure to get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to thank all of you who participated in today's discussion. And to our global family listening from all around the world, we say thank you. To our family in China, Xiexie. India, Zanyaba. Japan, Arigato. Korea, Kamsahamnida. Russia, Spasiba. Germany, Danke. Poland, Dziękuję. France, Merci. Spain, Gracias. Italy, Grazie. Egypt, Shukran. Ghana, Medasi. Nigeria, Eshe. South Africa, Ngiyabonga. Senegal, Jeret. Kenya, Asante. Israel, Toda. Pakistan, Shukriya. Afghanistan, Tashakur. Saudi Arabia, Shukran. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. Thank you, and may peace be upon you and the mercy of God and God's blessing.